אוקיי? So, פרשת משפטים follows פרשת יתרו. As we all know, in פרשת יתרו, the Torah discusses the giving of the Torah. Then we have פרשת משפטים that is mainly a parasha that contains laws between men and men, different laws between men and men. But at the end of the parasha, the Torah comes back to the story of the giving of the Torah. It describes again that Hashem tells Moshe to go up to the mountain, a covenant that is made between the Jewish people and Hashem. In fact, the fact that the Jewish people said Na'aseh v'nishma is written only in Parashat Mishpatim, as he mentioned last week, and not in Parashat Yitro. So we have the giving of the Torah, a list of laws, Mishpatim, and then again the giving of the Torah. And the obvious question is, why do the Torah divides the story of the giving of the Torah into two places and puts in between all the laws? That's our question number one for today. In addition, the parasha starts with the word ve'ele, and these are the ordinances that Hashem put before them. To start a new parasha with ve, with and this is not the usual. Usually it should be these are the ordinances, ele, not ve'ele. What is the Vav doing here? So Rashi says it's to teach us that the same thing that the Ten Commandments that are discussed in the previous portion were given from Sinai. These ordinances were given from Sinai as well. And the Vav, the end, is supposed to connect the two. What means in other words that there is room to think that maybe they were not given from Sinai? All the commandments that are written in the Torah are given from Sinai. Why would the Torah assume that we might think that these are not from Sinai, and that's why at the Vav. So that's our question number two. What is it here that the Torah wants to teach us about these ordinances by telling us that it's given from Sinai? Maybe the Torah wants to teach us that all the things were given from Sinai, but why does the Torah teach it to us exactly here? Why not connect it to any other mitzvah? So that's our number two question. Now, the Torah says these are the ordinances that you will put in before them. What is the before them? Usually the Torah says, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe le'emor. Hashem told Moshe, saying, Hashem commanded Moshe to say something to the Jewish people. This is a very different way of saying it. Hashem told Moshe, put it in before them. So obviously Rashi will explain the change. And Rashi says that Hashem told Moshe to put it in front of the Jewish people, all these laws that are in this portion, like putting a meal on the table in a very clear way, that it will be like put in front of them, that he will explain to them the reasons behind it as well. Rashi says, don't think that you should just tell it to them once, twice, but really make it to them very clear and explain to them the reasons. And why are we told this regarding these laws that are here? So I want to answer these questions on more than one level today. Depends on the time allowance. So as we said, these are mitzvot that are between men and men. And there will be some of the laws that are in this portion that will appear also in any code of law of other nations, because it's logical things that a person who is a decent person will understand and want to follow. Like, let's say, honoring parents, returning a lost object. Common sense tells us that in order to have a functioning society, and being that we are human beings, we should follow them, right? I lost something, I want it back. So when somebody else loses something, I should give it back to him too. Parents raised me, brought me to this world. Logic says that I should have gratitude and honor them. So these are things that will appear in other codes of law, or if it's not a law like honoring parents, but people will agree that this should be something that people should do and follow. Then the Torah tells us, these are laws that came from Sinai. What the Torah tells us, in other words, is that even though many of these laws make sense, we should not do it because it makes sense. We should do it because it came from Sinai. I'll go further with the idea. Let's say a person has a dispute with somebody, another Jew, and they want to clarify it in court. There is an obligation to go to a Jewish court, to a Beis Din, as we call it, right? And the Beis Din, the Jewish court, will define what is the right thing based on the laws of the Torah. Now, what if the case is that the people who are involved know for sure that in this particular case, the laws of the country that they live in are identical to the laws of the Torah? What means that the outcome in a Jewish court and the outcome in a non-Jewish court will be the same. Still, it's prohibited to go to court. One has to go to a Beis Din, to a Jewish court. Just on a side note, there are some exceptions to this law. Sometimes the Jewish court will allow a person, for whatever reasons, to go to a non-Jewish court. But putting this aside, as a general rule, one must go to a Jewish court, even if the outcome will be the same in a non-Jewish court. And the question is why? So obviously it indicates to us that the Torah wants us to do those things that are written in this parasha, even if they are logical, even if non-Jewish people will have the same logic as the Torah has and will lead us to the same outcome. We should not do it because of our logic, but we should do it because the Torah tells us to do it. Why? What's the point in it? Why do we have to follow it? Just because we got it on Sinai. Okay? So we have to understand first what's the place of logic according to Judaism. Hashem gave us logic. There are things that make sense to us and things that don't make sense to us. But when our logic goes together with the logic of Torah, it's not the proof that Torah is logical. It's the exact opposite. When we come to a conclusion logically, that is the same conclusion of the Torah, it's a proof that our logic was given some validity from Hashem. Meaning we don't base any decisions that we make on our logic. We base it on the laws of the Torah. Now, this doesn't mean that we should not use logic in order to come to understand what the Torah says, of course. How do I know what the Torah says? I have to use my logic. But I'm checking to know what the Torah says, and not what my logic says. What means that if there will be a contradiction between common sense and between what the Torah says, it will be clear to me that my logic is limited and there is no question. I must follow the laws of the Torah because this is what I'm here for. Hashem created me and created the world by looking at the Torah, and He wants me to act a certain way, the way of the Torah. Now, this changes totally the way we live our everyday life. Let's say a person is a businessman, right? And he works during the day and has different decisions that he has to make, how to conduct his business. What will be his guide? His guide will be what the Torah says. And whatever he'll do during the day will be following the Torah. It's an attitude to life. I get up in the morning. What will I do during the day? Depends from person to person. But what's my guide and what am I doing all day long? I'm looking into the Torah, into what the Torah says, and conduct myself accordingly. What means? That if I found a lost object, And I pick it up and give it back to somebody, I do it because the Torah tells me so. There will be occasions when the Torah will not obligate me to give it back. I follow what the Torah will say. When the Torah tells me to give it back, I will. When the Torah tells me not to, I don't have to. Because I'm not giving the object back because I understand that that's the right thing. I am here to follow every day, every moment, what Hashem wants me to follow during my day. So I honor parents. I don't honor parents just because I have gratitude towards them. I honor parents because Hashem told me to honor parents. Does it make sense to me? Yes. But I don't do it because it makes sense to me. I do it because Hashem wants me to do it. That's one explanation of why does the Torah tell me that these laws were given from Sinai. It tells me how I should relate to them. I should relate to them as commandments of Hashem. Now, in addition to the fact that each time that I do whatever I do during the day, I follow in the ways of Hashem, it creates an attitude. It explains to me why I am here. It tells me I'm here to follow. So when I'll have a test in any area, between men and men, between men and Hashem, if I conduct my life in such a way that I look at every activity, every thought, every word that I take out of my mouth, as I want to do what Hashem told me via those things, speech, thought, and action, so at the time of a test, it will be easier for me to overcome temptations that tell me not to follow, because I train myself to know, even in mundane everyday things that maybe other people do too, that I'm not doing it because it makes sense to me. I do it because Hashem said so. So if I'm standing in front of a test and I know what Hashem said and I know what I want to, I am trained to do what Hashem wants. So that's one way to explain the questions that we asked. And now we'll understand the questions that we asked in the beginning in a better way. We explained why it's connected to the giving of the Torah. Why does Moshe have to put it in front of us like a meal prepared on the table? Explain to us the reasons. Because even if we explain the reasons and we understand it, we are asked to do it because Hashem said so. So that's one way to answer this question. I want to take another approach or additional approach that will complement this idea. And this is the following. Let's take an example. Let's take there is a king that rules over an empire. And in every country that he rules, he has a representative who rules over this country according to his guidelines. So for the country, the specific country, the direct ruler is the one that is appointed by the king. Everybody knows there is a king, obviously, above all of them. But in everyday reality, who is ruling over the country? The representative that the king put there. Okay? So, one day, the king wants from this ruler of a particular country that he'll do something. So, he's far away. The king is in his place, right? And the country might be very far. Before the time of communication that we have today, if he wants this ruler to do something, he will send a messenger to him with an envelope, and in it will be written what the king wants from him. So let's assume that this messenger, he might be a young boy of 18, 19, 20, right? Is sent from the king to the ruler with an envelope instructing him what to do. And he comes in front of the ruler, a young boy, no special credentials, just a messenger. And he gives the envelope to the ruler. He opens it up, he sees what's written, and he does exactly what's written inside. If you don't understand the system, you see only what is in front of your eyes. What do you see? You see a powerful ruler who really controls the whole country. Everybody is obligated to follow whatever he wants and demands. And here is a young person that somehow has control over him. He follows what he says. But obviously, if you understand the whole system, you know that the young man here is irrelevant. He's only the messenger, and it's basically the king speaking to the ruler. Let's take this example to what's written in our extortion. Okay? Everything that Hashem created, but everything, if it's an inanimate, if it's vegetation, animals, human beings, all of them were created, obviously, for a purpose. There is a king over all of it. And we have to follow the rules, right? Now, the king has rules, and the king gives the tools that are necessary and the money that is necessary in order to execute his will. So everything that exists, either it's money or objects in this world, are basically messengers from Hashem. In those things, there is a letter. They are like the envelope. And inside each thing that exists, there is a message from the king that tells us what to do with it. To do the will of Hashem, to fulfill the purpose that he created us for, and to bring the world for wherever, whoever it has to come. And obviously, every object, every tree, every flower, every animal, every human being has a specific mission that they have to fulfill. So when we look at anything that exists outside of us and inside of us, we see it or should see it as the young man who comes to us with a message of a king, of the king. And he tells us what he wants us to do. In other words, in everything that exists, there is the word of Hashem. There is a message. The word of Hashem is A, giving it existence. Nothing can exist unless there is a will of Hashem that it will exist for the purpose. There is godliness in each and everything. And in each of everything that exists, there is a message for us how to use it. That's why we have mitzvot that are connected to anything and everything that exists in this world. You have a house, you have to put a mezuzah, you have to put a railing on the roof, and so on and so on. You have a field, you have endless laws, especially in the land of Israel, of how to use it. You have a fruit, how do you use it? Everything and anything that exists is like the child, like the young man who comes to us. What we see is only the external, the envelope. And we have to look for what's hidden inside. What is the word of Hashem? And what does it tell us that the king wants? This is not only for things that are external to us. This is also to things that are in us, like our thoughts, our ability to speak, our logic, our ability to speak, all of our limbs, all of our emotions, all the character traits that we have, all of them exist because Hashem created them, because they are needed in order to bring the world and ourselves to where we are supposed to get. And we have to look for the word of Hashem that is hidden in it. How do we know what is the word of Hashem? For this, we have the laws of the Torah. And it's really summarized in a pasuk in Tehillim. It's written, Magid Dvarav Le Yaakov, חוקיו ומשפטיו לישראל. השם says his words to Jacob, and his laws and ordinances to Jacob, to the Jewish people. So, first we are told that Hashem speaks to us. And this is true at all times, not only when we have prophecy, because everything that exists hides in it the word of Hashem. That does, as we said, two things, gives it existence, and there is a message there of what we have to do. How do I know what to do? חוקיו ומשפטיו לישראל. He gave me laws and ordinances. That via them, I can hear what Hashem wants. And there are many different levels to what I can hear via the mitzvot. If I do it on a superficial level, I go through the motion, but I don't prepare for it. I don't put my heart and soul in it. So I fulfilled an obligation. But what I'll hear, the words of Hashem that I'll hear, will be just what to do. But the more a person puts into the fulfillment of mitzvah, in terms of understanding it, learning about it, thinking about how to do it before, then he invests spending more on the mitzvah, beautifying it, whatever it is that a person can do to invest more in the mitzvah, the more he'll hear the words of Hashem, what means in other words, the more he will connect to Hashem via doing the mitzvot. And this connection is the purpose that for this Hashem created the world. Now the Pasuk in Tehillim continues and says, Lo asachen lechol goy. Hashem did not do it to any other nation. And it continues, Umishpatim bal yedarum. The other nations don't know the Mishpatim. But we just said in the beginning of the class that there are Mishpatim, that there are laws that are identical in Torah and in any other code of law or many other codes of law. So what does it mean they don't know the laws? There are two things about the laws. One is the logic in it, and many of the mitzvot we can understand, not all of them, but the examples that we gave, returning a lost object, honoring parents, and many others, don't kill, don't steal, we can understand. So the logic of the Torah, when the Torah says, don't do it or do it, they can understand. And non-Jew can also learn the Torah and all the facts that are written there, and can even do what's written there. But the connection that is created between a Jew is commanded to do the things and Hashem via performing the mitzvah, this is not given to the non-Jew. Meaning in other words, the Dvar Hashem, the words of Hashem, the godliness that is hidden in the mitzvot and can connect and does connect when it's done properly, the Jew to Hashem, this connection is not given to the non-Jewish people. So this really explains to us a famous saying that defines what non-Jewish people can have and what they don't have. Chazal say, Chochma bagoyim ta'amin. If you are told that there are non-Jewish people who are wise, with Chochma, wisdom, believe. They have also the power of logic. They can be very intelligent. They can be very analytical. And even referring to Torah, they can learn the facts and can even follow it. But Torah bagoyim al ta'amin. The power of Torah, meaning the fact that Hashem created the world via Torah and adjusted whatever is in the world or made everything that is in the world based on the Torah and its tools to get to the Torah, to the word of Hashem that is in everything, this is not open to an angel. This is the specialty of the Jewish people. From the time that Hashem chose Abraham and the Jewish nation out of all other nations, the ability to connect to Hashem via his words was taken away from them. This is the job of the Jewish people. It was taken away because they chose not to do it. They didn't want a connection with Hashem over 2,000 years, the majority of people. So Hashem chose the Jewish people. And now we are obligated to listen to Dvar Hashem, to listen to what anything tells us from Hashem, what's inside the envelope, and do it. So let's sum it up. We look on reality, the whole physical reality, everything that we can grasp via our senses, via our logic, is only an external aspect of the word of Hashem. It's like the envelope, the young lad that is coming to the ruler, right, and has some message from the king inside this. That's how we look at everything. Everything we have. I have logic. My question will be, what's hidden in it? What does Hashem want me to do with the logic? He wants me to keep it pure and objective. And the way to keep logic objective is by making sure that I don't have interests that will bribe me and cause me to see things in the wrong way. So logic tells me there is a mission here. Logic also tells me, know the limits of logic. Understand what you don't understand. And understand that your understanding is only a tool given to you by Hashem in order to fulfill your message, but you cannot rely on it when there is a contradiction between logic and Torah. Torah comes first, right? And so on and so on, the same with speech, power of speech, and any other thing. So a Jew is supposed to get up in the morning, look at everything that exists, and know that this is not the ultimate. That's only the external. Everything and anything has in it a Dvar Hashem that we have to listen to, and via it to connect to Hashem. When we invest in the way we fulfill mitzvot, when we have this attitude to life, our life experience is totally different. Because the more we open up to the connection to Hashem, the more godliness Hashem instills in us. And every level of godliness, additional level of godliness that Hashem instills of us, in us, changes our experience. We can get an example to it by looking at the day of Shabbat vis-a-vis the days of the week. When we do all of that we have to do, to prepare for Shabbat, and on Shabbat itself, refraining from work and doing the positive obligations that we have on Shabbat, like making kiddush and so on, right? We create a larger vessel for godliness, and the neshama yatera, the external, the extra soul, is entering us on Shabbat, and it affects our experience, right? We do the same thing, many things that we do on Shabbat, we do during the week. We eat, we drink, we sleep, but it's a different experience. Why? Because there is more godliness in us on this day. We are connected more to Hashem. So everything that we do for the sake of Shabbat connects us to Hashem on a deeper level. So that's another reason why the Mishpatim, they're given right after the receiving of the Torah, and why the Torah divides the story of the receiving of the Torah into two parts. First in Yitro, we are told about the receiving of the Torah. Then we have the Mishpatim, the deal with the mundane. And then we go back to the giving of the Torah to tell us that it's via the Mishpatim, via the everyday dealings, that follow the words of Hashem, that we really receive the Torah, that we really see Hashem connect to Hashem. Because what was the receiving of the Torah? The receiving of the Torah was not just that we got information. Avraham Avinu already kept the Torah. Even what will be decided later on by rabbis during the generations. So the greatness of the day is not the information that we got, but what we experience on the day, the connection that we had with Hashem on this day. And we can tap into it on a daily basis via the Mishpatim, as we explained. if we refer to them as things that hide in them godliness, and we have the ability to listen to it, to connect to it, to unravel it by putting aside the external and tapping into the inside. Meaning, if I take from this world, whatever it will be, food, pleasure in any way, and I immerse in the external only, I miss the point. I have to be part of the world because it's via the dealing with the mundane that I connect to Hashem, but I cannot be attached to it in a way that this is the essence of my life. Because then I remain with the envelope and with the young man without the message. When I refer to the world as an external only, a tool only, a means Hashem gave me, but I don't attach myself to it, my attachment is to Torah, then I really fulfill my goal. And I have to remember that Hashem put in me the bad inclination. And the bad inclination is trying every day, all day, to make sure that I'll remain in the arena of the external, that I'll refer to everything as an external thing. Meaning that I'll take physicality as the essence, as the main, as the real. And I won't remember that there is a Dvar Hashem there, that this is only an external that hides something very great that I have to unravel. So by dealing with the mundane, I have to remember somebody tries to make me forget that this is only the external, and I have constantly to do things that will remind me that the main thing is hidden and I'm supposed to reveal it. So that's another way to understand the questions that we ask. And I want to add the dimensions that I usually do not speak about. But the Zohar HaKadosh says it in this parsha, and I think to discuss it in general is important. We don't know much about it. We are limited in our knowledge about it, but we know it exists, and I think it's important to understand it for reasons that I'll soon explain. On the verse, on these are the ordinances that Hashem told Moshe to put in front of the Jewish people. The Zohar says that it refers to Gilgulim, to reincarnation. Meaning in this parsha, we have hidden the concept of reincarnation. The fact that we are here not only one time, but many times we'll come again and again to this world. And the question is why? And how is it connected to what's written in this parsha? Why would the Zohar say it here? It's a known concept that there is such a thing as reincarnation, that people come to this world more than one time. But why is it hinted here? What does it do with the parasha of Mishpatim? So first, let's see, why would a person come back to this world? Every person has to accomplish a certain mission. He was created in order to accomplish a certain mission. But as we all know, we have free choice. We can accomplish it in our lifetime, and we cannot accomplish it, or we can accomplish it partially. If a person did not accomplish his mission, Hashem might give him another chance. He will bring him back to this world and will give him opportunities for his lifetime to accomplish what he did not accomplish. In this particular case, it's not necessarily punishment. A person tried and did a lot of good in his life, but there is still something that he can achieve that will bring him in the world to come and after Mashiach comes to a higher level, and Hashem wants to give him an opportunity. One example that is told is the following, that there was a Ger Tzedek, a convert at the time of the Gaon of Vilna. That was very, very righteous. He ended up giving his life away because he was discovered as a convert, and it was a violation according to Christianity at the time, and they killed him. Very great person. Anyhow, generations after, right, a child was born to a couple, and after 3 years, the child died. And the parents were devastated. If I remember well, I'm not sure. They didn't have children, and they were promised a child, and they got a child, and 3 years later, the child died. And obviously, it was devastating. And I don't remember who was the person that the story is told about, great person, who told them, why do you feel sad? What was given to you was a child with the soul of this convert, and Hashem wanted to give him another opportunity in the world to come. In the first years of this child, he was not Jewish, and he nerved from a mother that was not Jewish. And if he would come back, said the great man, to this world, a nerve from a Jewish mother, it will open up heights in the world to come for him that otherwise he wouldn't have. And because he's so great, Hashem wanted to give him the possibility, and you were chosen to accomplish this unbelievable mission. Of course, it was very consoling for the couple, but it reveals to us that sometimes the soul will come back to this world in order to give it more, because it deserves an opportunity to accomplish more. A Gilgul can also be, and that may be more common, a way to give a person a second opportunity to make the right choices, because in the previous life, he didn't make the right choices. Why is it so important to know it? Because it's a very important piece of knowledge that can explain to us the whole concept of righteous people who suffer and wicked people who have a good time in this world. If we understand that a person comes here to correct something that he did wrong in a previous life, we will understand that his life here might not be so easy, because Hashem wants him to give him an opportunity to atone for what he did, or give him an opportunity to be here under difficult circumstances and still make the right choice. So that's very briefly, without any deeper understanding, the concept of Gilgulim. When I say we don't understand Gilgulim, what I mean to say is we don't understand based on it. We can't explain based on it the fate of a person because we don't have access to what happened before and for the reasons he was sent to this world. And we don't know what's happening inside him. So basically, it's a very hidden thing from us. Even when it refers to ourselves, we don't know if we were here before, when were we here before, what was our life before, and what is it that we came to accomplish. And it doesn't matter in terms of me having to fulfill my purpose in this world. If I was here before or I wasn't here before, I know one thing. In all the times that I'm here, I have to find the word of Hashem in everything and reveal it. Follow the ordinances. So in terms of my practical service of Hashem, if I am not on a very, very high level and know about who I was in previous lives, right, because most of us are not on this level, it doesn't matter practically for me. I just know I have to do what I have to do. But if I think in general about the base of Hashem, it helps me to understand that I don't understand, and it helps me to know that regardless of what I see in this world, and regardless of the fact that it doesn't make any sense to me, I am able to believe fully and completely that whatever Hashem does is justified and merciful, because the very fact of coming back and getting another chance is already mercy. Now, why is it written here in Parashat Mishpatim? Why does Zohar find it the right place to tell us about it in this parasha? When a person is created, for the first time, for the second time, any time that he comes to this world. Based on what he has to accomplish, Hashem gives him the means that he needs. So if I have money or I don't have money, if I'm talented or I'm not talented, which kind of talents do I have? If I'm born with this character traits or other character traits, in this family or in another family, in this time or another time, it's all catered exactly to what I need to accomplish. We find in the Torah that Yaakov Avinu crossed the river in order to take, to recollect a few jars that he left on the other side of the river. Yaakov Avinu was very rich. He didn't need these few jars, but they were given to him by Hashem as part of his possessions. So if he realized that he left it on the other side, he went to collect it because he understood that if he got it, these are part of the tools that he was given in order to fulfill the will of Hashem Vize. This is part of his tools, and he has to use them properly in the service of Hashem. So that's the Jewish approach to all possessions that we have. So when it comes to what is discussed in our exposition, monetary disputes between people, damages that are caused by one person to the property of another person, all of it has to be judged by Torah and by a Jewish court. Because our sages tell us, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, that Hashem is there in the court with the judges when they try to judge according to Torah in the proper way. The pasuk is, Elohim nitzav be'adat kel. Hashem is among the people who sit as a Jewish court. There is a story told about the Baal Shem Tov, who once ruled in a monetary issue between two people. One of them was a great scholar. And the ruling that the Baal Shem Tov gave was accepted. Obviously, the people who came for judgment to the court by him appreciated his greatness and had no doubt that they will do whatever he ruled. But one of them was a great scholar, and it seemed to him that the ruling of the Baal Shem Tov was not according to the laws of the Torah. And for the sake of learning, he asked the Baal Shem Tov, he told him, of course I'll accept your ruling. This is what the Torah told me to do. I go to a Jewish court, I must follow whatever was the ruling. But for my knowledge, for my understanding, for my learning, I'm asking, why did the Baal Shem Tov rule in this way when it seems that this is not the ruling of Torah? The Baal Shem Tov, who obviously saw what we don't see, told him the following. I ruled according to how I understood the Torah, meaning you are not changing the ruling because of what you see, right? But to me, this was the ruling of Torah. But I can tell you what is behind it. The person that you came in to with me, with him, to me, for judgment, is a person that you remained owing money to in your previous life. And Hashem gave you now an opportunity to give it back via this case in court. So Hashem guided me in this ruling to judge in this particular way. But it's amazing. You know, it's told about the Chatam Sofer that he never regretted a ruling that he gave. And even when he later on heard from others or told himself that maybe the ruling was not the right one, he never changed it. Why? Because he knows that Hashem is with him in judgment and whatever comes out is what Hashem wants. And he doesn't have to go by logic. It goes by what the judge at the moment, trying to see what the Torah says, what he sees, and according to this, he judges. It reminds us of something else that we read just a few weeks ago. And this is the establishment of the calendar by the Jewish court at the time that it was done via witnesses. The Torah tells us openly, "Achodesh hazeh lachem. I give it into your hands to decide when is Rosh Chodesh. And I'll follow you." And we are told what is the lachem, it's given to you, even if you make a mistake. Says Hashem, I'll adjust nature to you. Meaning, in other words, we don't know most of the story in terms of how Hashem runs the show. We see a very small fraction of time, and all we see is what our senses and logic can tell us, and they are very limited. And Hashem, in his ways, make sure that justice will be done fully and completely. And that's why we cannot go to a non-Jewish court, because this reality that Hashem is with the judges does not apply there. When they will rule exactly according to what the Torah says in this particular case, it will be a logical decision. It will not be a godly decision. While in the Jewish court, it's a godly decision, because Hashem is with the judges and maneuvering things in order to make sure that justice is done fully and completely based on seeing the full picture from creation till Mashiach and all that has to accomplish by each and every individual. So it makes it easier for us to accept a ruling that is not logical to us, and to look at everything that happens in our life, even if it's difficult, even if we don't understand it, with the knowledge that things are greater and broader than what we understand, and Hashem knows what He is doing. And that's another reason why the Torah divides the story of the giving of the Torah between two parshiot, and in between puts the ordinances. What he tells us is the following. What has to happen is that we will reveal the Torah, the words of Hashem that exist in the world in everything and anything, by using it in order to reveal the will of Hashem by following the ordinances. And these ordinances is what makes Torah ours. So the giving of the Torah is not a one-time thing. It was on Sinai, a one-time thing when Hashem showed us where is it that we can get to, what does He want from us, and He gives us the way now to achieve it, not as a gift given from Hashem, but via our effort, via our struggles, via our fighting the bad inclination, following the good one, trying to find the word of Hashem in everything and use it properly. The more we do it, the more we receive the Torah. The more are we connected to Hashem. So there is the receiving of the Torah before we keep the ordinances. And it's an ongoing thing of receiving of the Torah while living our life in the proper way. Okay, I'll finish here and open to questions and remarks. Esther, are you there?
Okay, I have something to comment about. What you're saying about a Gilgal, one of my sisters-in-law, yes. Lane, who had a stillborn child, and she was very distraught, and her father comforted her by telling her that some neshamos just have to live in a Jewish woman's body for a certain amount of time to receive their, you know, their desired outcome.
Completion.
So yes. It was just very, very meaningful to her to hear it at that time.
Sure. I'll support it by a famous story. A mother with a Down syndrome child came to the Chazon Ish for a blessing. The Chazon Ish, when he was older, was very, very weak. He lay down in bed, and that's how he learned Torah. When this woman came, he stood up for her, what was very unusual, and demanded a big effort of his. After the woman left, he gave her a blessing, his student asked, who is this woman that you stood up in front of her? So he said, I didn't stand up. I didn't stand up because of the woman. I stood up for the child. Because if a child comes to this world with such limited resources, obviously he lives a life that he cannot make moral choices, so he's not making choices now. So it means that in his previous life, he accomplished almost everything. And all he has to accomplish now is to enable other people to do for him, and he doesn't have to make any choices. And this means he's on a very high level. He accomplished a lot before. So I stood in front of him.
Well,
I have two questions,
go
Rabbi Zvi.
ahead.
Okay, first of all, are you in Eretz Yisrael?
No, I'm in the state, living today back home. That's why I have problems with internet. I have a temporary situation, and it worked with the internet. It worked all through the week, but not this morning. I don't know why.
Okay. All right. My real question is the Gilgulim that you mentioned, which Pesukim are they, is it connected to in Mishpatim? You said monetary matters, but
okay, the
specifically
first
which Pesukim?
pasuk, these are the ordinances that you put in front of them. Says the Zohar HaKadosh, if you want to understand how the rulings will be with all these ordinances that are written in this portion, you have to know that there are also Gilgulim. You can't understand monetary terms and how they are ruled in a Jewish court without knowing that sometimes it will be against logic, because it has to do with matters that belong to previous life. So
so
even if you don't know the particulars, right, it's
yes.
all of them. It's all the things that come to a Jewish court. Might be. Doesn't mean in every case it is like this. But via the Jewish court, Hashem enables things to happen. Or not only via the Jewish court, via the laws. For example, a person owes money to somebody. He loses the sum of money that he owes to somebody. And this somebody, Hashem brings him to this place and he can pick it up. And there are no signs. Let's say it's cash put in a way that there are no signs. And that's why the person picked it up. It belongs to him. So Hashem gave him an opportunity to pay back to somebody that he owed money.
So what is it? Eila Hamishpatim? What specific pasuk is it that we're talking about?
It's the general opening for the parsha. It's the first pasuk in the parsha.
Right. Say the word. Yeah.
Here are the ordinances. And the Zohar gives us an insight. You have to understand them, all of them. With the knowledge that a lot has to do with life in previous times. This previous life. Clear?
Who gives this over?
The Zohar HaKadosh.
The Zohar. Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Anybody else?
How do we know what we're here for in terms of a tikkun for a previous life?
Okay, we don't know what is the particular thing that we are here for. But what we do know is that we have to try to do everything we can. We don't know. What we need to do is to use everything that we were given or everything that we were not given in order to reveal the word of Hashem. And
so
if we try to do it, wait a moment, let me add something. If
sure.
we try to do it sincerely, to the best of our ability, Hashem will ensure that we will correct it, that we will get to the situation that will help us to correct it.
Okay, so I'm going to ask also, are the tests that were given related to the tikkun?
Yeah, everything that we do is a tikkun. Either a tikkun for the first time, or a tikkun for something that was before. What is a tikkun? A tikkun means I take something and I put it in the right place. It has a potential, and I take advantage of the potential. So we speak about Tikkun Olam in general, right? Which means that this world was created to accomplish something. And we have to do it, right? Now, it doesn't matter for me, for my practical everyday things that I do, if I was here before or not, if it's my first time here or my third time here. I know one thing. Don't take the world on the external level. Everything that is here for me to reveal the godliness in it. You look at the snow. I'm sitting by the window, right? You look at the snow. There is so much revelation of godliness in the snow. Just think about the fact that every fleck of snow has a different shape. In this courtyard that I see now, there is a number of flakes that if I'll count all my life, I won't get there. And each one is in a different shape. If I realize it, and if I say, Hashem, your creation is unbelievable, here I corrected the snow, and I revealed the word of Hashem on one level in the snow. Of course, there are endless levels, and it depends on the level of the person, and so on and so on. But on my level, that's a way to take something that Hashem created that is in front of me, right, and use it in the proper way. Clear?
Thank you very much.
Sure. Anybody else?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment based on what the Robertson was just saying about that, or somebody's question about Down syndrome children. They say that the Down syndrome children are very loving, and
right.
I thought that that's just how it is, but maybe that's a reflection of their neshamas, the fact that their neshamas
right.
have accomplished, you know. Yeah.
Right. Right. Thank you for the comment. It's very true.
Okay, small question. We're supposed to reveal what we find. Does that mean reveal it to ourselves or reveal it to other people? I mean, the end goal is to reveal it, right?
Right.
So
right.
How does one
See,
do that?
By the very fact that we reveal it to ourselves, we grow. And every person's growth affects the surrounding. But if we have opportunities to reveal it to others, for sure, we have to be a light to the nations too, by role model. And also, there are different instances in our life that let us do it. I stood once at the airport, right, by the passport control, and there was a long, long line, and there were some people who cut the line. There was a Yerushalmi woman, you know, with the black, you know, covering of her hair and so on, right, with a daughter. And it seemed to her that the daughter is going to, you know, try to push a little closer. She told her, we cannot do something like this. She didn't just tell her it's not right. There is an additional point here. We are messengers. We are watched.
Like symbols of something.
Right. We stand for something, and people will sure say the Jew. Right?
100%.
So that's a way we reveal godliness.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Okay. We'll, thank you. We'll finish here, and in Hashem, next year, next week, I'll speak for Eretz Yisrael, and I hope the internet will be fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Robertson, for calling the
sure.
call in. Thank you.